Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. At that time, you may press star then one to ask a question from the phone lines. I would also like to inform all parties that the call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Ms. Jenny Lyons. Thank you, ma'am. You may begin.
Thank you, Katie. As Katie just said, my name is Jenny Lyons, and I'm here with Public Affairs at NOAA Fisheries. Today, NOAA Fisheries is announcing a major step forward in combating illegal fishing and seafood fraud. These illegal activities undermine our domestic and international conservation and management efforts, and they hurt the fishermen who play by the rules. That's why the President set up a task force to address these challenges, and it's also why today's announcement is so important. So with that, I have the pleasure of introducing to you all right now John Hendersheet. John is the Director of NOAA Fisheries Office of International Affairs and Seafood Inspection. John is going to provide a brief summary of our news, and then we're going to open for questions. We also have Tom Gleason with us today, and he may chime in to answer questions as well. Tom is an attorney with NOAA's Office of General Counsel. If you got our media advisory, you have the correct spelling of their names and their titles. If not, you can find that media advisory on NOAA.gov or give me a ring right after this call at 202-603-9372. Just a reminder, though, this call is for working media only. So if you're not a member of the press, you're, of course, welcome to listen, but please don't ask questions. This time is really reserved for reporters. Operator, can you please explain the process for asking a question?
Once again, if you would like to ask a question from the phone lines, you may press star, then one, unmute your phone, and record your name when prompted. If you need to withdraw your question, press star, then two. Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to John. John, please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us on this call. So today, NOAA Fisheries announces the filing of the final rule to establish the Seafood Import Monitoring Program. This program is part of a broader seafood traceability program that includes domestic seafood as well for priority species. However, the regulation itself applies only to imports. We currently, the U.S. government has access to comparable traceability information for domestically harvested seafood at this time. So this program will provide the information needed to prevent illegal, unreported, and unregulated, which we often refer to as IUU, and or misrepresented seafood from entering the U.S. market. It will cover certain priority species that are particularly vulnerable to IUU fishing and seafood fraud, and it is the first phase of a comprehensive plan intended to cover all seafood imports and domestic seafood entering U.S. commerce at some point in the future. The establishment of the Seafood Import Monitoring Program does mark a significant step toward combating IUU fishing and seafood fraud. And this program establishes the permitting, the data reporting, and the record-keeping requirements for the importation of certain priority species of fish and fish products that have, as I said, been identified as being particularly vulnerable to IUU fishing and seafood fraud. There are approximately 13 species on this list of priority species. So the data collected through what is known as the International Trade Data System, or ITDS, which is the U.S. government's single data portal for all import and export reporting to U.S. government agencies. This will allow these priority species of seafood to be traced from the point of entry into U.S. commerce, essentially at the border where they are entering the U.S., back to the point of harvest or production to verify where it was lawfully harvested or produced. I want to make it clear that the Seafood Import Monitoring Program is not a labeling program. It's not an eco-labeling program, and it has no consumer-facing component. The information collected by NOAA Fisheries through this program will be confidential under the provisions of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the legislation under which this regulation is being promulgated, as well as other legal protections for sensitive business information. So the mandatory compliance date for this program is January 1, 2018. This will give the domestic importers as well as global suppliers of seafood to the U.S. a little bit more than a year to establish the necessary systems and procedures to comply with this rule. As a global leader in sustainable fisheries and a major market for seafood consumption, the U.S. has a responsibility to combat illegal practices that undermine the sustainability of our shared ocean resources. The final rule announced today reflects in response to numerous public comments and campaign messages received on the proposed rule and underscores NOAA Fisheries' extensive efforts to establish an effective program that minimizes the burden of compliance on industry while providing the necessary information to identify illegal and or misrepresented seafood imports before they enter the U.S. market. And that concludes my initial remarks, but we'd be happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Thank you, John. So with that, Katie, can you just remind them one more time how to get in line to ask questions?
Thank you. At this time, we would like to begin the formal question and answer session of today's call. If you would like to ask a question from the phone lines, please press star, then one, unmute your phone, and record your name when prompted. If you need to withdraw your question, press star, then two. Once again, to ask a question from the phone lines, please press star, then one, and record your name when prompted. Our first question comes from Catherine Bonroux from Politico. Your line is now open.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was hoping you could just go through any significant differences between the proposed rule and this final rule based on comments you received or, you know, any other reason for changes. And then my second question is, you know, the administration's intent is to expand this to all species. I'm just curious what's in place, like how – to make sure that that happens, given that there'll be a switch in the administration on January 20th. Thank you.
Catherine, thanks very much for your questions. First, with respect to changes from the proposed rule to this final rule, I'll note first that, as you probably know, a final rule must represent a logical outgrowth of the proposed rule. So, it needs to reflect directions and approaches that were identified in the proposed rule. So first of all is the mandatory compliance date. In the proposed rule, we acknowledge that there would need to be some time for implementation, both on the private sector side as well as with respect to the U.S. government's preparedness to implement this program. We asked for and received public comment on a reasonable time frame to accomplish that implementation. Comments tended to point to 6 to 12 months as a reasonable time to get this implemented. And we have obviously selected to go with a longer end of that range, allowing a little bit over a year for implementation. There is a lot of work to do in the private sector as well as with respect to international trade data system programming and other implementation work on our side. Another theme in the comments that was quite common is the need to accommodate small vessel and artisanal fisheries that may be ill-equipped to provide some of the information that we are requiring in either a reporting or a record-keeping mode. As a result, we took a look at, you know, what that impact might be, looked at other models, took a close look at how the European Union addressed a similar problem, and in this final rule have provided for the aggregation of harvest information for small vessels and for fleets of vessels that are delivering to a single mothership at sea. This will, while still capturing the type of information that we need to ensure traceability back to the harvest event, will significantly reduce the number of data points that would have to be provided by an importer of seafood that's been harvested by a fleet of very small vessels. And it also reduces the burden on some of our trading partners who may host some of those small vessel and artisanal type fisheries. Lastly, I will point out that in the proposed rule, we identified some challenges in establishing comparability in data available for domestically produced aquaculture species, specifically shrimp and abalone, relative to the information that we were that we do intend to collect through the Seafood Import Monitoring Program. A great deal of effort by numerous agencies and executive offices went into finding one or more strategies for addressing those data gaps. And at the end of the day, we have not been able to address all of those data gaps, and therefore the mandatory compliance of January 1st, 2018 applies to all of the priority species except for shrimp and abalone. The implementation for those two species is stayed pending our ability to establish that comparability between import and domestic aquaculture data. You know, with respect to your question about the change in administration and what sort of dynamic that creates relative to the stated goal of this administration to expand the program to include all species. First of all, you know, we do not have any way of predicting or commenting on, you know, what the specific priorities and strategies of the incoming administration will be. We do believe that the efforts to combat IUU fishing and seafood fraud and the broader agenda of ocean health and sustainability continue to enjoy widespread support across a coalition of constituent groups, and we don't really have any reason to believe that those fundamentals will change anytime soon. And so we are certainly following through on the mandate of the task force. We will be publishing a report later this year that looks at, if not the operationalization of this program, at least some of the issues encountered in developing this program and what that says, how that speaks to the development of a program that includes all species. What are some of the hurdles and what might some of the pathways around those hurdles be?
Thank you, John. Our next question comes from Lee Vanderbilt at Investigate West. Lee, your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for having the call. Can you walk us through, John, how practically this works, which government entities are responsible for collecting and compiling this information, and can you give us a time frame on when you hope to have this program expanded to all species?
So just walking through how this works, this is a government-to-business program. And what I mean by that is that the entities that are identified as responsible for compliance with this regulation are importers of record. They are U.S. Entities importing seafood of the species on this list of priority species. They will be responsible to provide harvest and landing information. So that would be things like what vessel harvested the fish, gear, the date and area of harvest, the time of landing, the place of landing. That sort of first stage within the supply chain, that information will have to be entered at the time of import through this international trade data system. So it is not a paper-based system, but an electronic data system for this reporting process. At the same time, these importers of record will be responsible for maintaining records of all subsequent stages in the chain of custody up to entry into U.S. commerce. So this would include things like shipping, trucking, storage, reprocessing, repackaging, all of the stages that some of the seafood might go through. So in some cases, this could be a rather short chain of custody if we're talking about, say, fresh mahi that's flown in from a nation that harvests that species, or it could be much more complex if we're talking about species that are processed and reprocessed and go through a number of stages within a global supply chain. NOAA Fisheries is responsible for receiving those data and for conducting the audits that would be associated with the chain of custody information. We've been very clear about the fact that NOAA has the ability to ask Customs and Border Protection to hold product at the border. So if we have intelligence that that is the case, we will certainly do so and utilize the information that we're collecting to verify the source of that product. That said, we cannot allow this program to result in a slowdown in trade of seafood. And so to a large extent, this program will be enforced through post-entry audit and verification. That is a process that will be led by my office of really going back to importers of record and verifying some of the information that was provided through the reporting and as well records that are kept by that importer.
Great. So our next question comes from Catherine at Politico again. And if anybody, while she's getting queued up, if anybody would like to ask a question, again, that's star one to get in line to ask a question. And no problem if it's a second question. Go ahead, Catherine. Your line is open.
Thanks. I just had two follow-ups. If you could just clarify if the compliance date for shrimp and albacore, is that the one that isn't set yet, is that just aquaculture products or is that all shrimp and albacore? And then just my second question is about the number of estimated importers that this will impact. I think you gave the 2,500 figure earlier this year, but I just want to make sure that's still the same. Thank you.
Thanks. So first of all, I want to clarify that it is abalone and not albacore.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so so shrimp and abalone are the two species, and so you are correct. Those the technical term is that that part of the effectiveness of that part of the regulation is stayed until further notice. So essentially, implementation for those two species is delayed until NOAA provides further notice to the public. We will, of course, ensure that there's ample time for compliance when that notice is given of essentially lifting this stay for shrimp and abalone. With respect to the number of affected importers, I believe you're correct. We're going to take a look through some of our information here, but I don't think that we've come up with a different estimate at this point. Oh, excuse me. There was one other question about the shrimp and abalone that you had, and that is sort of what is the source of those products. And this will apply to all shrimp and all abalone, regardless whether that was harvested in a wild capture fishery or whether it was grown at an aquaculture facility. Why? It's because from an international trade agreement perspective, we have to avoid differential treatment of like products in our markets. And so to the extent that imposing this regulation, say, on one origin of shrimp and not on the other, one might be concerned about how that might be placing a burden on some importers and not others. And for that reason, in many aspects of this rule, we're treating things at the species level as opposed to the aquaculture versus wild capture approach. looking at our analysis in the final rule, National Marine Fisheries Service has estimated that the rule will affect 2,000 importers and 600 customs brokers, making approximately 215,000 entries per year for the priority species subject to this initial phase of the rule. So that gives you some sense of scale.
And I am not showing any questions in line at this time. So, again, if you'd like to ask a question, this is your chance with the experts. It's star one to get in line to ask a question. It's okay if you've already asked a question before. And I'll give you just a second if there's anybody else who would like to. Lee, you're back on with Investigate West. Go ahead.
Thanks. Just a follow-up question. What's the time frame that's estimated right now for bringing other species online through this program? And can you talk a little bit about how the information that's being collected now on this database differs from how it will be collected under the program?
So, first of all, with respect to time frame, there is no set time frame, and that is due largely to the fact that there are a lot of steps to be taken to bring in additional species. I've already identified an issue that we are still working with respect to comparability of domestic aquaculture data and what we would be collecting through this rule. And there are additional species that are raised in aquaculture production in the U.S. We also, in this process, had to do extensive analysis on our current collection of data in U.S. wild capture fisheries. And so we will need to work through a number of those issues as we add species to this program. And I really can't give you any more specific information about the pace at which that will take place. I think there was a...
Lee, your line's still open. Was there something else there that you had nuance to that question that maybe we...
Yeah. With respect to how the data is being collected. So,
how it differs from how we collect currently to how will things change?
So how will things change? Basically, on the domestic side, we are currently we have access to catch and landing information through a variety of federal and state authorities for data collection and reporting in U.S. domestic fisheries. And where that is done through a state authority, NOAA has agreements with those states to have access to the information. That will not change. That covers the scope of this program. It does not require new rulemaking, and so we will continue to be able to track the source of domestically harvested seafood as we normally, as we do now. There are three NOAA catch documentation programs that are currently being reported through the International Trade Data System. That's the Tuna Tracking and Verification Program, the Highly Migratory Species Reporting Program, and the Antarctic Living Marine Resources Import and Export License Program. All three of those were paper-based programs that are now administered through the International Trade Data System. We've already taken whatever steps we can to align the compliance with those programs along with this so that that does not create redundant compliance obligations of importers. And so finally, then once this program is implemented, that it will represent a new set of data reporting. We're not collecting the type of information for these species at this time, and so that will be an entirely new data set that we will have access to.
And while we're giving reporters on the line a chance to queue up to ask any other questions you might have, again, that's star one to do that, I'm going to ask Tom Gleason, our attorney here, if he has anything else he'd like to add to what John has said.
Sure, just to pick up on what John said, in terms of what changes under the new rule, for the importers of the priority species, they'll be required to obtain an international fisheries trade permit, which is currently in place for those three programs that John mentioned, the AMLAR program, the tuna tracking and verification program, and the highly migratory species trade tracking. So folks now importing these priority species covered by this rule will be required to get the international fisheries trade permit, and then there'll be a reporting requirement at the time of import, which John alluded to, and basically it's reporting the what, when, where, and who of the harvest event, who harvested it, the product, what did they harvest, where did they land that product, when did they harvest. And then as John has also alluded to, there's a record-keeping requirement for chain of custody information so that NOAA can trace that product back to that harvest event.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, John. And again, reporters, while you've got the experts on the phone, if you have any other questions, I'll give you just a second to think them up and get in line with the star one if you'd like. Otherwise, going once, going twice. Sold. Please follow up with me if you have any other questions that come to your mind or any other clarification that you need. My name is Jenny Lyons, and I'm with Public Affairs here at NOAA Fisheries. I'm in and out of my desk today, so I'm going to give you my cell phone number. It's 202-603-9372. Again, 202-603-9372. Our press release is online at NOAA.gov, and you can also email me at Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E, dot Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at NOAA, N-O-A-A, dot gov, and I'd be happy to follow up with you on any other needs you have or questions. Thank you, all of you, and thank you, Katie. Back over to you.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.